Future Blah, your alternative. 88.5.
Well, 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 it's time for some more game chat here on Big Head Mode. We are going to be talking about a bunch of things tonight. We're going to be talking about the very tragic and sad loss, of course, of Iwata, Satoru Iwata, who's one of the Nintendo greats. I'm joined by Carlo and Tegan. Guys, we're going to be talking about bad gaming habits.
You
got, a few things to share?
Nah, I'm great at gaming.
No? Well, I've got a list, Carlo. I've got a list of things we can spill for you. And, of course, an interview with Tommy Tallarico, who's an awesome gaming composer and the head of Video Games Live. We'll talk about that all later on the show. This is Big Head Mode. That's right, you are on a Big Head Mode, 2RRR's only gaming show. I'm Ben O'Brien, and Carlo, Tegan, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
My pleasure, Ben.
Carlo, it's nice. The first time you've heard that theme, isn't it? It's a new theme.
Yeah,
once again, composed by Barty McKinnon, who's a regular co-host, Big Head Mode from way
Smoke
back.
406.
It's his gamer tag, if anyone wants to just follow his routine. He's abroad at the moment, of course, in New York, I believe, just mapping.
Getting more information for the school. For the show, I meant to say.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure he's mapping every street just ahead of the eventual launch of Division. So look, as is customary, let's talk what games we've been playing. Carlo, I know you've recently gained and lost a computer.
Yeah, I had a computer for a week that I built from component parts, and I played a lot of Company Heroes on Company Heroes 2 on that. And other than that, I've been playing a little game. You might have heard of it. It's called Gwent.
Christ,
believe like there's a game built into Gwent called The Witcher 3. which you have an option of playing around Gwent.
It's a shame that there isn't another game within Gwent, so you could get hooked on that. Get hooked on the game within the game. Tegan, do you think we're just about ready to stage an intervention with Carlo and the Gwent?
Well, it's funny you say that because I got so addicted to Gwent that I swapped over to Hearthstone because I didn't want to have to go into The Witcher to play Gwent.
That means I'm the only one in here who's unaffected.
So we're having an intervention.
Yes, we are. We're having an intergwention, man.
Yeah. Hey, here we go.
Never off.
Here we go.
Never bloody off, this one.
We have hit the show with that. We've hit the show running, you know? It's good. I've been playing a lot of, Batman Arkham Knight. And I got a bone to pick with something. A lot of reviewers have been just raging about, well, not raging, that's an oversell. They've been complaining a little bit about that first bit of DLC, the Batgirl DLC. Mm-hmm. There was a mission. It's a story mission. You play as Batgirl with Robin.
Mm.
And people say it's very insubstantial. I played it and loved it. It was like an hour and a half. And it's got full story. It's got some great stuff with Joker and Harlequin. And, I mean, all the characters you love, Carlo.
Oh, man. My main man, Harley Quinn. Just getting in there. Harley Quinn.
Yeah. But I thought it was really good. I thought it was, it wasn't
too
like...
Too many eggs, Batman! Classic, yeah.
Oh, God.
Every time Carlo makes a jokey impression of a comic character that he knows nothing about, he kind of skirts close to something.
Yeah.
Like, there was a villain called Eggman, or Egghead.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's something he'd say, perhaps.
Oh, yeah. Riddle me this, Batman!
There you go.
There it is.
There you go.
Yeah.
Knowledge, you know, it gets in there somehow.
Yeah.
But look, that's all. I played
Get
that.
Get in the Batcopter. Brum, brum.
That's a catchphrase. I'm pretty sure in the old Adam West series, that was one of the sound effects that said on the time. It was like, bang, whack. Get to the helicopter. Brum, brum.
Brum, brum.
That's the noise they make.
No, good old Batty man.
Mm-mm.
Doing whatever a Batty man can.
Lord.
A bat can.
Okay, let's...
What's happening?
It's that chair. That's the Bartier seat. And that is...
turns you into a real dickhead.
Now, ever since the show where I had to fade Bartier's microphone down, it's just... It's something that keeps creeping into my mind every show. I just think, I just have this power. I could fade everyone's mic down. I could just be me talking to myself, agreeing with my own opinions. Running, you know, like most radio.
Like a totalitarian radio station.
Exactly. As the way it should be. Yeah, so we are going to be talking about our gaming, bad gaming habits.
We didn't hear what you were playing, Tegan.
That's true. No, you did mention Hearthstone.
Yeah, Hearthstone.
Oh, yeah. Hearthstone?
Yeah, because, well, why would I want to play anything else when it's just basically Gwent?
you're right. Yeah. You're exactly right.
Yeah, I played a bit of Batman as well. Yeah, that's been about it, actually. It's been a bit of a, just, yeah, Hearthstone week.
I hear that.
Mm. You should get on it, Carlo.
No. I only have one love, and that's Gwent. Where would I be without my Vernon Roche and my Gwent-y siege engineers?
Because Carlo plays it in Polish. He just has slightly weird pronunciation of all the... Like, they sound virtually the same, but like, what did you say that character's name was? Like,
Vernon Roche.
And what Vernon Roche. Kira is different too, right?
Yeah, you say Kyra, don't you?
Who? Kyra Metz.
Yeah.
You mean Kira Metz?
He probably hasn't even met her yet. He's still just in White Orchid playing just that first tutorial game of Gwent.
But when I get past White Orchid, do you guys better get ready for me to finish that game?
Look, what I mean, let's we can talk about it throughout the show, but the main reason I wanted to talk about bad gaming habits is I just thought it wasn't actually a gaming thing that prompted me. Everyone, I reckon, has those little things that they know they do and you hate doing it. Like, I do this thing. Today I went to order a coffee where I always order my coffee with the first word being takeaway. Like, can I get a takeaway coffee? So when you go to a place that only does takeaway coffee, they give you this look like, yeah, yes. Yeah, sure, mate. Yeah, what do you think? Or do you want a mug instead? Do you want to have here? And sit? Just why don't you pull up a chair that we don't have, mate? This is a coffee stand. I hate it. I'm the same in games. Like, you have these little things you catch yourself doing, you know, hoarding stuff.
Yeah. Mm.
Definitely a big one. Playing games you shouldn't play.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what you're talking about. Certainly not Gwen.
Playing games that you should put down, walk away from, no. And play something else of.
He's talking about putting down Batman so he can come and play Gwen.
You need to.
Yeah.
You need to, Ben, because, I mean, those cards aren't going to win themselves, yeah, and there's a lot in Skellige.
There's, I mean...
So many.
You know what? In the world of The Witcher, they talk a lot about this drug. There's this substance called...
Gwent.
No.
Is it Fistek?
Fistek? Yeah. And I've never seen anyone in that game negatively affected by this Fistek drug. They just talk about it.
Fistek.
Whereas every person plays Gwent to a degree that I would think it's damaging to their home lives and to their careers, to everything. And it's literally the only recreation that anyone has in this world.
Why would you want any other?
Yeah, exactly.
I just think, you know, maybe one of the side quests.
I just feel like you
be...
haven't got into Gwent. You know, because someone who was into Gwent wouldn't be saying these things.
Well, okay, that touches on one of my bad gaming habits, though, which is completionism. We talked about a bit on the our last show with Tom McClurkin. We talked about completionism in games.
Mm.
And it's an old hangover from when I used to love completing games, and I still do it from time to time. I just find myself falling into really mundane fetch quest things that I know I don't enjoy, and it's just like, it's literally just sort of ritualistic.
Yeah.
It's like auto, you know, me just doing it on autopilot. Like, oh, well, there's a list of things. I've got to tick all the things off.
It's like, why is the Inquisitor who's saving the world going to, like, fetch, like, a cow or whatever the hell it was in there?
Yeah.
Like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. And that's what Gwent is. Like, I love playing Gwent, but I've realized that it's the collecting all the cards that drives me more than the game itself. Like, if Gwent was this thing, like poker in Red Dead Redemption, that every now and then you just stop and play it, that's cool. But it's because I have this feeling like, in the back of my mind, I know at some point I'm going to have to travel back to every single merchant in every single town.
Not if you'd just done it the first time through, Ben.
No, because even then, I can't trust that I have done it, because there were some instances when I played someone early on and I didn't have enough cards.
You got Ben.
I got, you got Carlo got me. Carlo got me good. Yeah, I don't like that. It's like a game holding you to ransom. But I know the problem's with me, like, because most people would say, well, just don't collect them. But I have to, because it's the thing that you do.
Got to catch them all.
It's like a failure on my part if I don't do it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean,
you guys are just agreeing. Yeah, Ben. Yeah.
Yeah, Ben. You're shit. You're real shit.
Yeah. You're agreeing with my failure.
Yeah.
But you also both just confess that you are doing the same thing with Gwent.
I love
but we're
the
loving
game.
It. Yeah, we're loving it. So I don't see it being a problem.
Oh, God. Oh, man. 10. 7. Oh, man. I'm going to need to scorch them. I don't use Scorch. I'm against it.
I never knew Scorch either. And I only just recently started using Decoy.
Oh, Decoy's great. Decoy's fantastic.
Oh, they've used a spy on me. Now I'm going to use the spy on them.
Yeah, Decoy, spy, double up, man. That's how you do it.
I just remembered another game I've been playing a lot of, actually. And I think I've just hit a wall when there's no reason to play it anymore. Fallout Shelter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Did you get a Rad Roach attack?
I get a lot of Rad Roach attacks. I mean, I've got over 120 people in my vault now.
Oh,
everyone's so just banging.
So many rooms. Yeah, it's just like this. It's a constant sex room in the living room. That's literally all they do. I'm here going, guys, we've got a really fragile ecosystem here, and I'm trying to sustain our population. And every time I come back, there's like 8 new babies and the same 2 parents.
Just the
like my entire vault. They've got one surname.
Are they all practicing edo gaming? Like, I mean, like a dogamy? I mean, like, there can only be so many people in that.
The funny thing
vault.
Is, too, that, like, the people who do it the most are the people with high charisma levels. And charisma is the most useless skill in that game. Because you look at the skills people have and you go, oh, you've got agility. You're perfect for food. You can help serve food. You've got strength. You can work in the power plant. You've got this. You can do that. Charisma. Look, you're just getting in the way. I'll put you in the bedrooms or the storage room. You can just stay there. And then I come back, and they've just been banging. And when 2 people in this game have a baby, the baby has whatever the common, like the strongest common skill they have is, which is generally charisma because they've all been in the same area. So they're just reproducing like useless members of society.
More people.
Yeah, so they're wiping your vault out. Eventually you just have this really charismatic vault.
Well, I've just gotten to the stage of going, anytime someone's born, I send them immediately into the wasteland. I give them like whatever the first bit of armor and weapon I have, and I go, if you can survive like 24 hours in the wasteland, then you've earned a place in my vault.
My God, you monster.
Yeah, well, their parents knew the risk, and they couldn't keep it in their goddamn pants. I
didn't realize you were so against charisma, Ben.
Oh, God.
I'm really anti-charisma.
It's because he has none, Carlo.
But I've got agility. Anytime, that's why...
You got gut, Ben.
That's why at a party, instead of just having witty repartee, I'll just sort of leap up with cat-like reflexes onto the couch behind me.
See, someone with high charisma would have said repartee.
They would have. They would have. Yeah. Not me. look, let's crack into some music. This is Street Fighter 2 from the Video Games Live Level 3 soundtrack. We'll come back after this. Talk a bit of news. You're on 2RRR 88.5 FM. Oh, man. I think that marks probably the 12th or the 13th version of Guile's theme that's ever been played on this show. So if I had some kind of bell or sound effect, you know, Sonic Boom. There we go. Marking that
Guile.
One. Yeah, once again, Carlo has showcased his perfect gaming knowledge.
I'm all over that game. Bloody fight.
Let's get into news and let's get the sad one. Christ. let's get the sad news out of the way. And obviously, there was a big shocking death on Monday, and that is Satoru Iwata from Nintendo has passed away at 55. And, like, it was a real shock, I think, to a lot of people.
A huge shock.
So soon after seeing him do stuff at E3, you know, and being so full of sort of that classic wacky Nintendo character.
Yeah.
It's weird that, like, our last memory of him is going to be seeing that puppet transformation.
Oh, God.
But, I mean, I don't want to go. Obviously, everyone's been talking about it, and there's a lot of tributes and stuff out there. But I thought, just to reflect on him, there's a lot of stuff that, that he worked on that I just didn't know about. Like, did you know he was the president originally of HAL Laboratory, which was one of the early developers on Nintendo stuff from the Super Nintendo and N64 era? Pokemon Snap, original Smash Brothers, all that stuff. All these games that we grew up. He created Kirby.
Who's my favorite?
Hi!
Yeah. So good.
And that's the thing that seems the coolest about him is that he was 100% a developer first, that became the president. So he didn't have a corporate mindset to Nintendo's games. It was really all about, you know, creativity and innovating and trying to find, you know, projects like that. Was there anything that he worked on that you guys played as kids or anything you have a particular fondness for?
Definitely Kirby. Like, Kirby's Dream Land on my old brick Nintendo. Amazing. Mm.
I was a big old Pokemon Snap fan. Big old Pokemon Snap fan. Hey, I was. I like, it's one of the first games. I tracked it down. I have it still on my 64.
Really?
When
that's
I go
awesome.
I tracked that game down.
Did he work on Pokemon Pinball? Because I actually really liked that game.
I know about Pinball. Pokemon Stadium.
Oh, that's
like,
so good.
He assisted in development, basically, like a lot of Pokemon.
Yeah.
A lot of the original Pokemon Game Boy games as well, like Gold and Silver.
I don't know why they haven't
got Red and Green.
They should make him into a Pokemon.
Earthbound, which we didn't really get in Australia. Mm. But that's
well, I'm always Earthbound, Ben.
No, someone argued that you're not, Carl. Balloon Fight is another one. So, you know, it's a real loss, and, you know, I think people are probably going to be tracking really closely what happens with Nintendo. They haven't announced someone to succeed him yet.
We've had some real dicks over on the old Geek Bomb Facebook tribute to it. Just the news had broken hours beforehand, and someone's like, oh, good, maybe Nintendo will go in a good direction. I'm like, someone died.
It's, and I felt bad, because literally the show before that happening... You know, Tom and I had complained a lot about Nintendo.
You did this. This is your fault, Ben.
Look, people have said that to me. But I think when someone like this passes away, especially in such tragic and unexpected circumstances, like you really do have to just draw a line and go, look, I mean, I know we get very attached to our games. Like, I love games and I'd love to see more great Nintendo games, but I can draw that line and go, okay, this was a man, not a... Mm. A company, not a thing that just churns out stuff for me. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's very
exactly
sad
right.
that. So yeah, look, let's remember him. I guess go home, play a Kirby game, download an emulator, and play Pokemon Snap, or make your own version of Pokemon Snap.
Just with a camera, a couple animals with some weird ears stuck on them, yeah, and a whole mess of pesticide balls.
That's right. That's the way you live. Another thing that happened this week, which came out of nowhere for me, is Dead Island 2 lost their developer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're the one who told me about this, Tegan. That was at the time. I played a bit of that game at EB, I think it was EB Expo last year. And mm-hmm. even though it was like really early alpha, it was a fun game.
Yeah, it was. It was great. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't know if they've gotten anyone else on board yet. I haven't followed the story that closely.
They haven't yet. And so it looks like it's, well, I mean, even when they do, it looks like it's either going to be in development hell or it's going to...
Yeah.
It's going to be a long process before we see anything from that game.
Mm.
It's a real shock. I mean, especially after Dying Light was quite successful and a lot of people jumped on board with that game. You know, I feel like they could have done a lot of interesting things with Dead Island 2.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I was really excited for it.
Yeah, they were talking about just making everybody alive.
Yeah,
it would have just been a real wacky adventure.
It was. I mean, if they did that, it was just going to be island.
It's actually it was going to be put on a peninsula. That was the twist.
Yeah. You get around and wait. Wait, this is attached to land.
Well, I mean, it was called Dead Island 2, but it was set in LA. So, I mean, I'm not sure how attached they were to that. You know, that
aren't all continents islands in some way or another, Ben?
Boom.
Oh, I got. Did I get got again?
Yeah.
Jeez. Colour's on fire today, or is
there's
he?
There's no need to slow clap me, Ben.
You know, he's slow,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, no. Let the record show, Carlo was clapping himself.
I saw Ben clapping.
I saw Ben clapping.
Okay. Yeah.
I see what's going on here. Did you guys hear about this game called The Flock?
No, tell us more.
Saying, what, The Flock? Okay,
oh,
go.
No.
All right.
Okay, I'm not on your side anymore, Carlo.
It's a horror game that stops working when too many people die.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So it's like a multiplayer game, but it keeps track and there's a constant tally of every player death.
Well, yeah,
and
it's
they
a pool
count
of lives.
Down. Yeah, mm. And it counts down. And when it gets to zero, the game ceases to exist. That online doesn't exist anymore. You can only then play the game in offline mode, or if you play it on your own server, which apparently is very difficult to set up.
Wow.
I love that. I love the idea of that. Like, the developers have said it's specifically to make the game feel much more tense and like this.
It's definitely going to be trolled, though.
Like,
something awful is definitely just going to get
20,000
people.
One guy that jumps off a cliff.
Yeah.
That's interesting, though. Like, it'll be a really interesting social experiment because, you'd think that's my first instinct is that people will do that, but then, you know, who knows how the game sucks you in, or, you know, you might feel like a big decision to make. Or maybe there aren't ways to kill yourself. Like, you know, you can only... I don't know. But look, it sounds interesting. And like, there's quite a lot of interesting games that have been announced. The other one is an Australian game coming out called Hacknet.
So excited for this game. Yeah. I'm so keen.
Basically, it's just a hacking simulator. So it's sort of like a real-life hack sim made by a guy named Matt Trebbiani in Adelaide. Shout out to him. And it just seems like it's taking that sort of hack interface that you get in a lot of other games, but not making it a simple pipe moving.
Not just changing traffic lights like in Watch Dogs.
Yeah, they're taking that thing that people like have clearly been interested in other games, but actually making it an in-depth, complicated, simulating sort of experience.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Yeah, as long as they have the snake that keeps sort of running through and getting to the end in a la GTA, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, yeah, because that's what hacking's like. I mean, that's what we've all been there for that. Look, let's go to another song and then come back, and we're going to talk more about bad gaming habits. And Kyle, I want you to think very long and hard about what yours are before I dob them all in. This is, again, from Video Games Live. This is The Secret of Monkey Island. We'll be back after this.
Here we go!
Bad gaming habits. Let's crack into it, and I'm going to put my hand up first. My worst habit in gaming is hoarding loot.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, like, there's two kinds of hoarding loot I do. Like, anything that's lore-based, it screwed me up a big time in The Witcher. Like, those goddamn books that you don't get rid of, and it's like, they have no use. And I don't read them. You know, sometimes I skim them, but when I pick them up, I don't read them. I just think, one day I'll get around to reading them. One day I'll just spend an afternoon and just rifle through the virtual pages of some excellent lore books, and it never fucking happens. And I'm stuck with this goddamn inventory that's just clogged up with books. And then the other type is that it happens a lot in Fallout when you get like a game where supplies are limited. Anytime you get a really powerful weapon that only has like 5 shots, I always think, I gotta save this for a really, like, you know, a really precious occasion.
It just sits
there. Yeah. You just think, no, that's not it. And then you level up to the point where you just never have to use it at all.
Yeah.
Like scrolls in Skyrim, you know, the one-use spells?
Yeah.
Never use them. Never, not once.
All the time.
Really? You're a scroll master?
Oh, no, a dragon. Better summon a skeleton. Bang. Level 7. Let's fight it together, skeleton. Yeah, I'm always using scrolls.
But they're one use.
Yeah.
So? Why don't you use them once?
Like, why don't you just use actual spells that you can keep going?
Because I don't use spells. I'm not a magic user as a character.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Just, you know, keep on track, Ben.
Okay. I mean, look, that was my... Look, I've dobbed one in. What about you two?
Okay. I am such a bad person. I love just sniping bitches, especially like back in the old days with Counter-Strike. I am that person on
the sniper.
I'm the sniper. Just sniping.
It's a legitimate strategy.
Everybody hates it though so much.
No, I'm with you, man. I'm with you on sniping.
Good.
I hate that whole, and it's only because games like Call of Duty that have really fast-paced life and death cycles that sniping feels like this cheap thing. But like, you get a game like Battlefield or something, sniping's great. You get really immersed in that whole, like, that role of, you know, I'm hanging back. I'm just sitting here lonely on this hill, just surveying everything.
And
quite often, I won't get many kills at all, but you feel
satisfying.
Cool. Yeah. You feel like you see more of the battlefield than anyone else. Yeah. You know?
I attribute a foolish amount of sentimental weight to items that I use for a long time, and so then never get rid of them and clog up my inventory. So it'll be like, oh, that was my first sword. And then I'll use that, and then I'll have an amazing sword, and I can't lose my first sword. Games like Skyrim, that kind of works because you can put them in a chest.
Yeah.
Games like The Witcher or, you know, Knights of the Old Republic, back in the old, no, I can't. I've got to keep my old lightsaber.
Yeah.
You know?
It's especially hard in The Witcher because, like, the cosmetics of stuff is so good. Mm. You might find a sword that just looks really cool.
Mm.
And then you find a better one and then you upgrade and you just sort of like, my other sword, I didn't even realize before, but it had a really nice patterned red, you know, scabbard on my back, and I liked how it looked. And this sword's a little bit weird and curvy, a bit too elven for my liking, you know? Yeah. Sort of.
Not into those elven weapons?
Nah. Bloody racist. Not really.
Yeah, come on, mate. Yeah.
Look, they had their time.
Let's keep it friendly.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I find it really hard to upgrade to something if I don't like how it looks, even if the stats are way better. Like, I'll hold on to something.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be weaker, significantly weaker in a game, just for cosmetic reasons.
Mm.
You know?
No wonder he has all those charismatic people in his bloody vault. It's all about looks to them.
Yeah,
that's true. They are all wearing nightwear as well. Yeah, that's a big problem. Yeah, the other thing I do is that whole sort of that one more level thing in RPGs.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go to turn it off, but if I'm, say, 60% of the way to the next level, I will keep playing until I get the next level.
Yeah.
And then you go, you level up, you put that skill point into something, and then you go, I'll check out what that skill point did, and then you play a little bit. Like, yeah, I do that all the time.
But that leads into my other really bad habit of, I'll just play for a little while, and then I'll go, like, 10 hours, and I haven't eaten at all. But you get to the point where you're just not
hungry.
In
the game or in real life?
In real life. So it just turned into, like, I just haven't eaten in, like, 10 hours or something like that. And maybe it's, like, that can be my new diet. Lose weight just by eating, because you just forget to eat.
See, I thought that this was a discussion more about, like, habits that we have while gaming.
That can be.
Because I've got, like, I have terrible ones. Like, I have gaming clothes that I just go, well, I'm going to do anything today. I'm going to put on the old gaming clothes.
Oh, Lord.
Is it symbolic? It's like, once you've got the clothes on, it's like, well, I've got a game. Yeah. I can't do anything.
Nothing needs doing. I'm terrible. I like, because I just binge on games when I have time off.
Mm.
And like, hours go by. Like, I played Company of Two the other day. I got up early. And I thought, you know what? Got up early, played a little bit of Company Heroes 2. Then I've got some other chores to do around the house. And then it was nighttime.
Look, it happened. I mean, that's a real part of gaming, especially mm-hmm. when games like The Witcher and stuff that are just time sinks, like Dragon Age Inquisition. I mean, going back to what I was talking about before about those games that have checklists,
yes.
I find that they're awful traps because you get so fixated on the list that you lose track of time.
That's why they have them, Ben. Keep you playing, keep you in the game.
But if it was a game, if we were just playing story, you might go, oh, one more mission. Yeah. And then I'll, you know, whereas those sort of list-based objectives, you go, well, looking at it realistically, I've got this amount of time to play. I'll try and tick that off and that off and that off and that off. Mm-hmm. And then you just sort of, you're so fixated on these false goals that you look back and you're like, well, there goes. That was an entire day. That was an entire day gone.
That's what you get for collecting shards, Ben.
That's what anyone gets for collecting shards. And if you're listening and currently playing Dragon Age Inquisition, don't.
I try to tell you that. Try it.
I know. Not just the shards, though. Just that game, you know?
I won't hear a bad word against it.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, that's another bad gaming habit I have. All right? Replaying games too soon after playing them the first time.
As someone who has played like all the Mass Effect games multiple hundreds, I reckon I could have maybe put 1,000 hours into those games.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's a tenth of the 10,000 hours I need to be an expert
on. Because you love replaying certain games like I do.
Mm.
How much time do you generally wait before you replay?
Oh, like Mass Effect. It's like, well, finished Mass Effect 3 today. Better start another character on Mass Effect 1 and play through into Mass Effect 3 again.
But at least there's, like, games separation. Like, yeah. I am a sucker. Like, I'm replaying Batman Arkham Knight at the moment. I'm a sucker for a good New Game Plus.
Yeah.
And because I love the idea of going, you know what, I can take all of the stuff that I have, you know, I've earned over that first playthrough and have it from the very beginning of this next game.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the Batman games do it quite well because they make everything harder and stuff. But then, like, I hit this wall and I'm like, I should have waited a bit.
Got to fully
like, as much as I love this game and I love this stuff, it becomes like you just don't immerse in the story and the world in quite the same way as you do. It becomes more goal-orientated than like sort of immersive.
Mm. I did
the same with The Witcher, you know? It was sort of more about what decisions and what that, but you kind of, you know, if it's still fresh in your mind, you know what things to skip immediately. Like, you make decisions based on efficiency rather than on,
true,
you know? I mean, like, think in a game like, and this is what I found with Dragon Age Inquisition, because I started my original save on that and then I went away for 6 weeks, came back and started a new one because I'd sort of forgotten a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of stuff in that game that there's no point in doing once you know what the outcomes are. You just go, well, what, you know, do I need to waste time collecting these or going and doing, you know, those refugees will be fine. This isn't going to affect anything.
They're just going to starve and...
But will they? Maybe. I know, it's not my problem.
I replayed that immediately and regretted nothing. I find that with a lot of BioWare games. Like, I've always been able to go straight back to Knights of the Republic because then you just play full-on Sith or something, you know? You know, I've never had a problem with BioWare games jumping straight back in. It's a vastly different character, though.
Yeah.
I find Dragon Age is slightly harder in that way because you don't have as big a choices, you know. But I do like playing around with different things. Like, I played as a really religious character, and then I started straight away again as a very anti-religious elf character who had elven gods and, you know, take that.
I think giving yourself, like, restrictions on your character like that is a good way to avoid the other stuff we talked about, like hoarding loot. Like, if you have a really specific goal of what your character is, you know straight away, well, I'm never going to use that. I'm never going to bother with that.
Yeah.
But it's those games like Skyrim where you become everything in that game that you just collect everything because you're like, well, I'm the master of magic and I'm the head of the Fighters Guild and...
Can I name a bad gaming habit that you have, Ben?
Oh, please, I know exactly what you're going to bloody name. I disagree.
Tell me more, Colin.
When you try and play a team game with Ben, always a maverick. Ben refuses to work with teams. He refuses. Like, you're like, hey, Ben, we're going to do the heist now. He's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just getting a haircut. He's like, I gotta look cool for this heist. Colin. Yeah, come on, Ben. We're all waiting in the flat. We need you to come back to the flat so we can go for this heist. No, I need to get a custom. I'm looking for a cool leather jacket.
Customarily, the idea of a maverick isn't that they're off on their own, just like shopping.
In this case, it is.
It's not like in the military. They're like, Johnson. Sorry, Chief. Or, I'm gonna sit this one out.
Or even
cuts
more
back
than
to
that.
Johnson having a latte. Yeah,
but even more like, we'll be like, we got. What's our plan today? We're going to get a plane. We're going to fly up as high as we can. And we're all going to practice jumping out and seeing if we can get back in the plane. And everybody will get in the plane. Everybody's really excited. And we'll fly off. And then Ben will jump out and blow the plane up and kill everybody. And like, why did you do that, Ben? And like, oh, I thought it was going to be really funny.
Yeah. How many times have you done that, Carla?
Only because you started doing it.
How many times? And also, bear in mind, when Carla...
It is pretty fun.
When Carla says, let's go up for a fly, what he means is, let's fly this plane into the ocean.
No, to the edge of the map, and then it's really
fun. What happens when you fly the plane to the edge of the map?
It gets really hard to control, and suddenly everything crashes, and you die.
And it crashes.
So you all go down together, Ben.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, I like looking at everybody panicking. It's good fun. There needs to be more storms that you can fly a plane into that affect
Carla,
you.
Good family fun.
If everyone did the same thing all the time, life would be bloody boring, mate. Okay? Look, let's go to some music. This is Beyond Good and Evil from Video Game Live. We're going to come back after this, and we're going to play the interview where I chatted to Tommy Tallarico from Video Games Live. Be back after this. Well, earlier in the week, I got to chat to Tommy Tallarico, who is an awesome old-school game composer. He worked on some fantastic games, Earthworm Jim, Disney's Aladdin, Cool Spot, and he is also the founder of Video Games Live, and we talked about that. And that was Tommy. And now for listeners of the podcast, I should point out that we're going to play the full interview because we talked for a lot longer than that, and that's going to be at the end of this, so keep listening and you'll be able to hear that whole interview. Till then, let's go to some messages and then wrap this bad boy up. Well, that brings us to the end of another show.
But not the end of the show for good.
No.
Jesus Christ.
Thanks for clarifying. Because I'm sure there were probably a lot of people out there who were just like, what?
Was that it?
They were getting ready to just like delete the podcast.
Well, no need, guys, because it's going to keep on going. Just making a little bit every week.
Forever. I was going to say until we die, but no. Mm. We've made plans in that eventuality and pre-recorded over a million episodes to endlessly play.
It's been a busy week.
In fact, that's why any time we have a show where it feels like we've run out of things to talk about, that's probably because we've already exhausted it all and there's millions and millions of...
Years ago. We recorded this in the 1950s, guys.
The weird thing is that we did our Witcher 3 review like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was still on point. But if you want to see the stuff that is out there now, you can go on our website, bigheadmode.com.au. That's where we've got all the podcast and all that stuff, along with sketches. A great new sketch went up this week, one of my favourites, our 10th sketch.
It's my favourite because Ben dies.
Ooh, does spoilers. He? It's terrifying. It's our scariest sketch, probably. Depending on what you think of the Australian politics game sketch. But look, that's up there, along with all the details about Bonus Stage, our live gaming talk show, which is, our next show is next Wednesday, and we've got some
Wednesday
cool
guests. Wednesday the 22nd.
That's right. Tickets still available. You can get them on the website or the Giant Dwarf Theatre website. It's in Sydney. Sorry, Melbourne people. You keep asking. We're working on it. We might see you soon. Who knows? But yeah, we've got some great guests. We've got Cara Jensen McKinnon, who is a comedy writer about town and Dead Set Tetris legend. Ray Johnston is back again, of course. We've got a couple of interesting, I was going to say characters, but they're real people in a lot of ways. We've got, I think we're going to be joined by Emma Lemming, who is a reformed lemming. She's coming on the show. That's great. And of course, renowned psychologist to the video game stars. Dr. Oliver Socks is going to come talk about his new book. Yeah. He's treated the best of them, Mario, Sonic, Samus, all of them, basically, all of them. So we're going to find a lot of interesting stories about him. So go to the website, bigheadmode.com.au. Until then, we'll see you guys next week. Up next is Accidentally Curly's Treat. And until then, keep on gaming. See you guys next week. Tommy Tallarico, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
It's kind of surreal to be talking to you, actually, since you made a lot of music from my childhood. Earthworm Jim, Cool Spot, Disney's Aladdin. Is that something you encounter a lot when you talk to other gamers or fans?
Yeah, you make me feel old, too. Right? I was lucky and fortunate enough. I've been doing this over 25 years now. So, yeah, when I first got into the industry, working on the NES and the Game Boy and Sega Genesis or Mega Drive had just come out. The Super Nintendo was just coming out. So it was kind of interesting because, you know, back then the approach to doing game music was so different. You know, Everything kind of started to change in the mid-90s when CD-ROMs became available as a storage medium. We no longer had to, kind of fit everything into little cartridges with no space and no time and no technology. But, of course, those days were some of the greatest video game music of all time was written back then because we didn't have, it had to be good. We with such little space, melody was everything. So, games like Mario and Zelda and Tetris and Castlevania and Mega Man and all those amazing sounding games, Sonic, they were special as well because of, melody is so important and that's all we had.
So was it very sort of, being there on the foreground, I guess, of this pretty new medium, did you find that gave you a lot of creative freedom, or was it quite restricting?
Yeah, for me it was always creative because to me it was always cool to be able to, back then, do something in a video game that no one had ever attempted or ever heard before. So, when you talk about one of the earlier games I worked on, you mentioned Earthworm Jim, for example, that's a great example of, hey, I'll play banjo. We'll listen to banjo music during this level, or we'll use, and it's like, you do something like that, and it's like, well, no one has ever done that before. When I worked on a game called The Terminator, to go along with the movie, and it was for the Mega Drive CD, and it was the very first time that a live guitar had ever been recorded, and it was one of the first games to ever have 3D audio in it. So it was kind of fun back then, because no matter what you did, it was kind of going to be something new that no one had ever heard before. And my approach was always to write good music, not necessarily to it didn't have to exactly match the scene or the level that was happening, as long as I could, I wanted to know what the emotion was. Were we being chased or was somebody chasing us? Are we scared or are we happy? And so from there I would, and then I'd kind of watch the characters cadence or the, you know, to get the tempo, watch, you know, how is it, was he moving fast? Was he moving slow? Was it, you know, something like that? And then just write a good piece of music and throw it in there. Again, Earthworm Jim being a good example where none of that music really fit any of the levels, but when you played the game, it all kind of worked, and it was funny because it was a kind of humorous type of game to begin with, so I could get away with a lot more. But that was always my approach. It's just write a great piece of music and throw it in there because I wanted people to want to listen to the music even after they turn the game off.
But you know what else is exciting? Let's talk about video games live a bit because... Because that's a really cool project, and I mean, the idea of combining game music with a live orchestra, it seems like a no-brainer. But I was wondering if, you know, when you first came up with the idea, did you meet any opposition or have any difficulty actually trying to convince people, you know, that this concept could work?
Oh, we still do, yeah. But when I first started doing it, this was back in 2002, right? So this is over 13 years ago. If you can imagine, everybody I spoke to thought I was completely insane, including the video game publishers themselves. And so, you know, I remember going to a company like Square Enix and saying, hey, Final Fantasy and Nobuo Uematsu is this amazing composer, and he does this great music, and we're going to do this big show at the Hollywood Bowl, and it's going to be with the L.A. Philharmonic Orchestra. There's going to be tens of thousands of people there. And they look at me like, who's Nobuo Uematsu? But they didn't even know. This is like the U.S. office. Of course, I'm sure they knew who he was in Japan, but in the U.S. office. And so, you know, that's kind of what I was up against early on. No one had ever done anything like this in the United States. They had done a couple of video game symphony concerts over in Japan. They'd actually been doing them from the Dragon Quest series back since 1985. They were doing them, but they never used video. They were very, very traditional. So they kind of took video game music and made it very classical in nature, which is fine. That's great. It's very prestigious and cool. But I wanted to bring something completely different. You know, for me, video games themselves, they're fun, they're energizing, they're, you know, they're all these different things. They're cutting edge, it's technology, it's, you know, interactive. I kind of like to describe video games live as having all of the power and emotion of a symphony orchestra, but combined with the energy and excitement of a rock concert, mixed together with all the cutting edge visuals and interactivity and technology and fun that video games provide, because that's what video games are. They're fun. And the reason I created the show is I wanted to prove to the world how culturally significant and artistic video games have become, but I also wanted to help usher in a whole new generation of young people to appreciate the arts and appreciate a symphony. So yeah, you're dead on when were people, you know, kind of skeptical about it. Absolutely.
You touched on it a bit there, but you know, the interactive elements of the show, I found that really interesting because, you know, obviously you haven't been down to Australia, so my experience with video games live has mostly been through the albums and the music side of things. So when I was reading about it, I was really interested to know that, I mean, you have a lot of interactive elements. You have meet and greets with, you know, developers and composers and actual interactive video game sections. It seems really driven by that fan passion.
Yeah, and fun. I mean, that's the thing. Like, my two greatest loves growing up were always video games and music. You know, and I grew up, I was the first generation of people to grow up on video games. I'm 47 years old now. I mean, you know, I look like I'm 30 and I act like I'm 12, so it all averages out. But these are my two greatest passions. And so, yeah, it's, you know, there's other video game shows that are out there now who've kind of copied our success and who've actually been to Australia multiple times. My whole thing is we have the passion. We're the only show that's actually made by people who make video games, for a living. We're not just some producers who are looking to make a buck off of the fans. you know, and I think that really comes through with the humor in the show, the way we present the show, the fun, the excitement, the energy. To me, this is a complete celebration of the entire video game industry. And you're right, you know, we don't charge people for meet and greets like other shows would do. You know, we have these kind of fun, interactive things where I'll pick somebody out of the crowd to come up on stage, and they'll play a video game while we're playing the music and changing it in real time on the fly, depending on what the person's doing on stage and on screen. You know, we encourage people to bring their cell phones, and we interact with people during the show with their smartphones. So, you know, we'll take a picture of the audience, we'll put it up on Facebook and tell everybody to tag themselves in the photos. I mean, again, it's just, you know, video games are about having fun. And what I didn't want to do is take video game music and make it all serious and classical and everybody's got to be quiet. We're about to play video game music. Everybody be quiet.
We've talked a lot about, you know, what it's been like the last decade for you doing this show. What about the next 10 years? I mean, fan and gamer culture has, you know, exploded in the last decade. Do you think there's scope to push things even further now that you know that that passion is definitely there for what you're doing?
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, you know, I'll keep continuing to do this if people are continued interested in coming. You know, like I said, you know, when I did that first show, I created 18 segments for the show, and it was the very first time ever anywhere in the world, including Japan, that games like Kingdom Hearts and Metal Gear Solid and Halo and Warcraft and Sonic were ever played live anywhere in the world. And so, but since then, every single time we create new content. So at this point, 13 years later, I've created over 150 different segments for Video Games Live. And we've added technology over the years. We've added multiple screens over the years. Now with, like, you know, GoPro cameras, we put them all over the instruments within the orchestra to get these, like, you know, get some of these camera angles that you could never possibly, no one has ever seen before. We'll put one right on the end of a slide trombone. I don't care. You know, so... And so, you know, conductor cam, whatever it is. And so there's so many of these different things that we do that are always improving the show, but also always changing the content. Just over the next couple months, we're introducing 8 brand new segments, including things from Grim Fandango and Phoenix Wright and Katamari Damacy and some brand new Warcraft stuff. Overwatch from Blizzard as well. Siberia, that franchise is, you know, Siberia 3 is just coming out. We're doing something from that. The Witcher 3, you know, all these different games that, and the classic games as well, too. I mean, we got 5 different Zelda segments. We got about 6 or 7 different Final Fantasy segments, 3 or 4 Mario segments, about 10 different Blizzard segments. So there's even the old games that we've already covered. There's always still stuff to do, you know. There's so much great music out there. We could never possibly cover it all, but we're certainly going to try.
Well, Tommy, I wish you all the best with it. And for people listening to this show in Sydney, grab your tickets. The Sydney show is July 30 at the Emore Theatre. Tommy, thanks so much for coming on. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
I appreciate you helping to spread the word for us, and I hope to see you in a couple of weeks.